proud of it. And if the rest of the country had followed our lead, we wouldn't have had all these problems over all these years either.
You know, Quasimodo predicted all this.
Who did what?
All these problems, the Middle East, the end of the world.
Nostradamus. Quasimodo's the hunchback of Notre Dame.
All right.
There's an old saying in Tennessee. I know it's in Texas, probably in Tennessee, that says, fool me once, shame on you. Shame on you.
Tune in for a shortcut through 2002. New Year's Eve at 11.
You fool me, you can't get fooled again.
Here on WBAI-FM, listener-sponsored radio in New York.
Obviously, I know. I'm just saying.
Yes, that's correct. On the 31st at 11 p.m., Shortcuts with Peter Beauchamp. You are tuned to listener-sponsored, commercial-free community radio WBAI in New York at 99.5 FM, on the internet at WBAI.org. Coming up at 6 p.m. will be a report of the day's news with the WBAI news team. Right now, stay tuned for Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen.
This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen, coming to you Tuesday, December 24th, 2002. Friday, December 20th, the BBC reports U.S. forces pace on Iraq. By asserting that Iraq is in, quote, material breach of the United Nations Security Council Resolution 1441, the United States is positioning itself to go to war. 12 hours later, the BBC reports U.S. sets tripwire for Iraq action. In effect, the BBC stated, London and Washington have now introduced a tripwire for military action if there is so much as a hint of Iraqi non-cooperation. Material omissions, the U.S. cover story for assault on Iraq, is today's Taking Aim program. The day before, Thursday, December 19th, U.S. Secretary of State Colin Powell at the State Department held a press conference. The full transcript is available at the newyorktimes.com/international. And in it, he referred to the December 7th, 12,200-page document that had been submitted by Iraq to the Security Council. And Powell said, quote, the inspectors said that Iraq failed to provide new information. He said, our experts have found it to be anything but completely accurate, full, or complete. In fact, Secretary of State Powell referred to the document as recycled information and flagrant omissions, going on to say, quote, there are material omissions that, in our view, constitute another material breach. Material omissions? What are the real material omissions? The fact that, with this 12,200-page report, the United States took charge of it so that not even the five permanent members of the Security Council who were supposed to have full access to the report did see it. And when the U.S. finally submitted the report to the United Nations, 8,000 pages were missing.
That's over two-thirds of the document, simply deep-sixed, and relegated to the control of the Central Intelligence Agency. And on the basis of what the U.S. government declares to be evidence, which they won't disclose, they are prepared to go to war.
Go to war. The full extent of Washington's complete control over what it considers the Iraqi dossier, according to the Sunday Herald, which comes out of Scotland, and on December 22nd, they said that U.S. Colin Powell, with his statement of omissions, is really just trying to talk about the material breach. And what this means is that the U.S. is staging is planning, is preparing, is getting ready for crossing the line and going to war.
In The Guardian on the 20th, the lead article is, January 27th is the decision day for the war against Iraq. America last night invoked the trigger phrase for the war when it accused Baghdad of being in material breach of its UN obligations. And with that, the deployments are already underway, and the article describes how George Bush is prepared to go to war immediately after the 27th of January, when the chief weapons inspector of the UN, Hans Blix, is to report to the Security Council on the progress of his putative inspections. But, of course, the entire charade is nothing but a cover for the fact that this desperately impoverished and totally destroyed nation has had only those weapons that had been supplied to it by the United States in a sustained effort to direct Saddam Hussein's war against Iran after the Iranian Revolution. And every single item of what are purported to be weapons of mass destruction, biological and chemical agents, were supplied by the United States under CIA direction. It's instructive that in this very article, Powell is quoted, if Saddam Hussein wants to make amends for deliberate omissions in his report, he must accept turning over all the Iraq's intellectual elite, their scientists and the families and extended families of the scientists from Iraq, where they will be taken to be interviewed by U.S. intelligence officials. This is from The Guardian. And then Colin Powell, who's, we're told, is studying the entire document, and we are asked to study Mr. Powell. I suppose that would be called a colonoscopy. Mr. Powell homed in on the lapses yesterday, stating that 26,000 tons of anthrax remained unaccounted for. It's most instructive. Never has there been a scintilla of evidence to suggest that Iraq had possession of a quantity of 26,000 tons of anthrax. Anthrax is virtually monopolized by the United States as a militarized weapon, and its dissemination in this country had been long established, in fact, by the New Scientist in London, as a weaponized military strain of anthrax produced exclusively with a DNA fingerprint in U.S. military labs.
And it's the U.S. AMRID at Fort Detrick that supplied anthrax to countries throughout the world, be it England and via England to Saudi Arabia, or be it directly to Iraq. Now, what Colin Powell had said is that the Iraqis, in their report, hadn't accounted for 4 tons of VX nerve agents, although he wasn't specific about what he meant by the precursors to VX, that they had tried to get uranium from Niger, that the growth material, as Ralph was referring to, of the 20,000 liters of biological warfare agents, 15,000 shells for use in biological warfare, 6,000 chemical warfare bombs, and unspecific nuclear information. Whether or not Iraq ever had any of this material, there is no proof. But what there is proof of, as exposed by The Independent on December 18th in an article by Tony Patterson, is that he's referring to a copy of the original dossier that had been that the Berlin newspaper, Die Tageszeitung, had gotten a copy of and had exposed that the UN Security Council list in Iraq's document had specified 150 foreign companies, of which many were from the United States, Britain, Germany, France, and China. Now, 24 of the U.S. companies did supply Iraq with equipment and know-how for its weapons programs from 1975 onwards. Some, what's not in the report is that some of this was done overtly, and much of it was done covertly at the direction of the Reagan administration and George Bush Sr. And this went on for many years, and we'll go into that a little further. But German companies such as Siemens were exporting machines, according to the article, that were to eliminate kidney stones. But the United States claims that this machine had a dual use because it contained a high-precision switch that could be used to detonate nuclear bombs. Now, when the newspaper, The Independent, and the German newspaper, Tagesschau Zeitung, talked to Siemens, Siemens claims that this is absurd, that this high-precision switch could not be used to detonate nuclear bombs. But other companies, such as Bechtel, were very active in Iraq. Let's look at some of the companies listed. These are companies that are familiar names to all of us. Honeywell, for instance, Unisys, Sperry, which is part of Sperry Rand, Rockwell, which is well known for its missiles, Hewlett-Packard. Most everyone has a Hewlett-Packard printer, but Hewlett-Packard manufactures, according to the article, it released nuclear and rocket information and also equipment that was useful in the chemical program. DuPont, Eastman Kodak, American Type Culture Collection, not as familiar. Carl Zeiss, the U.S. part of the German company. And, of course, Bechtel. And then there are other companies that may not be as familiar to all of us, such as Spectraphysics. But if you go to the Internet and you look at what some of these companies do, you find out that a company such as Spectraphysics produces lasers. So when they're talking about this company or another one such as TI Coating, which produces coating materials that are used in the cutting tool manufacturers or in cleaning glass tubes and so forth, that this is a list that of people not like U.S. Amrit that actually supply anthrax and other biochemical biological weapons in the United States and throughout the world. But these are the basic electronic and rocket companies and also medical companies that distribute throughout the world. For the Chinese companies, you have China Wanbo Engineering, Huawei Technologies, and the China State Missile Companies, companies that were involved for the most part in building the fiber optic system in Iraq. Ralph?
Well, Maya, actually, the BBC made the position extremely clear because you made reference to the VX nerve gas and the presumption that there were, in fact, any significant amounts of this in the possession of the Iraqis. The UNSCOM report in 1999 established that there was a site where the VX nerve gas supplied by U.S. companies had been stored, and it was totally destroyed. And they measured the trace elements from the area where it had been stored, the trace elements in the soil, and the UNSCOM report concluded at the time that this supply from the U.S. had in fact been destroyed by the Iraqis. So it's a total no-win situation for the Iraqis, because no matter what it is that the inspections have shown over the years or that they themselves have done, the U.S. is going to still maintain that they're in possession of this. The U.N. inspections team had actually confirmed the secret operations of the U.S. spies who were doing this, that the amount of VX had been supplied by the U.S. to the Iraqis had been destroyed, and the trace elements in the soil confirmed this. So it's really a question of the willed deception of the American people. The material omission is that of the truth. And no matter what it is that is on the ground, the U.S. will draw the conclusion it desires. And this is very much established by the DEBCA, Israeli Intelligence Weekly Disclosures, Weekly Number 88, which described the real nature of the so-called inspection facade. They said, quote, "The undercover inspections are a United States intelligence operation. The project is in the hands of a special task force made up of elite units armed with combat helicopters and aircraft, spy planes, and satellites. Unlike the Blix outfit, these investigators are fanned out across Iraq. Quote, our men in the field know where 90% of Saddam's weapon systems are located, even mobile ones that are moved from place to place, those that are used for the actual defense of the country. We keep them under tight on-site observation. When the war starts, we will be there before Hussein can order his men to hit the triggers. And the article in DEPCA establishes that this U.S. spy operation, which is the real meaning of all of these inspections, which is to scope out whatever potential little means of self-defense this impoverished and devastated country of 22 million people with a third of the productive capacity of Kuwait and 1/17th that of Saudi Arabia, this impoverished country where its population in the countryside lives on 30 cents a day. According to the United Nations, 30 cents a day sustains the population. This devastated country has no weapons capable of doing more than barely maintain its own self-defense, and not even that. So we have never seen so Hitlerian a scenario of fabrication and war, beating the war drums on pretext as this charade of inspections that carries the imprimatur of the United Nations, even as the UN inspections are a cover for the CIA inspections on the ground. DEPCA states, this invisible arms inspection project has a dual purpose. It locates the weapons of the Iraqis, and it harvests the data, making them inaccessible to the UN inspections team, holding it ready for the Bush administration whenever it is required. The White House is able to call on General Tommy Franks, I'm still quoting, to produce such evidence as he desires to prove that Iraq's mountainous declarations are false. All the general needs to do is order his elite units guarding 16 square miles to seize a particular system of defense weapons, possibly with an Iraqi crew, and to declare triumphantly that they are in breach. And there's an instructive aspect to this, too. The UN inspection team itself cannot carry out its work, DEPCA states, because it is penetrated by Iraqi agents. And these Iraqis have managed to fit electronic jackets on United Nations measuring instruments, which will throw them off and make them emit false data. These technical assistants from Arab countries are completely infiltrated by Iraqi intelligence, unquote. Here you see, prepared in advance, the big lie on the part of the intelligence agencies to disallow any remotely objective reporting by the United Nations inspections teams by saying that whatever they say can't be true because Iraqi spies have put electronic jackets on the UN measuring equipment. Meanwhile, you see, they were either drunk or sleeping, these UN inspectors, while these crafty Iraqis fit these electronic jackets. I mean, it's an insult to the intelligence of anybody with a head on their shoulders.
Newsday, their United Nations correspondent, Mohamed Bazzi, had written on December 13th, U.S. firms on list aided Iraq arms development. Now, you will recall that over past Taking Aim shows, Ralph specifically has talked about the Senate Banking Committee report that was done in 1994, which concluded, quote, the United States provided the government of Iraq with dual-use licensed materials which assisted in the development of Iraqi chemical, biological, and missile systems. So the 1994 report found that the U.S. had licensed dozens of companies to export various materials to make mustard gas, VX nerve agent, anthrax, and other biological and chemical weapons. And the report says specifically, quote, the same microorganisms exported by the United States were identical to those the United Nations inspectors found and recovered from the Iraqi biological warfare program. so much for material omissions. Now, in preparing this show, I went to our personal extensive library and found a book that I hadn't read before. Very interesting book called The Secret History of How the White House Illegally Armed Iraq, Spider's Web. It's by Alan Friedman. Alan Friedman is a correspondent for the Financial Times of London, a four-time winner of the British Press Awards, which is the equivalent of the Pulitzer Prize, and has worked extensively with Ted Koppel and ABC Nightline when he was on the Iraq Gate while serving as the Financial Times Milan correspondent. It is an incredible book. And in the prologue, he talks specifically about George Bush Sr. and James Baker because, as he says, quote, Bush and Baker were the architects of a series of secret policies that committed the American taxpayer to assisting Saddam and allowed the reckless export of U.S. technology to some of the Iraqi dictator's most cherished and lethal weapons projects. Now, this went on throughout the 80s, starting with Ronald Reagan, and they used an Italian bank, Banca Nazionale del Lavoro, through an office in downtown Atlanta, Georgia. And they had former CIA agents set up private businesses and then export arms and precursors to VX and anthrax and so forth. And they did this on a regular basis.
My Bert Lance, the crony of Jimmy Carter, was deeply involved in that particular bank in Atlanta. And indeed, the bank in Atlanta is part of the series of bank launderings of drug money and covert operations that trace from BCCI to the Nugenhan Bank in Australia, which we've discussed in relation to Oliver North and FEMA, and in fact, to the entire Osama bin Laden family nexus with Khalid bin Mahfouz, through which these bank vehicles were funding the Bush father and son companies in Houston, Texas, as the Houston Chronicle had documented in 1992. These chickens do come home to roost. It's a nexus of banks that are fraudulently disseminating laundered money and for covert ops and for drug operations. They all are deployed on behalf of U.S. imperialism to further its nefarious designs in terms of the oppression of people, the seizure of their resources, and preparing the pretext for mass destruction and war.
Another of the people actively involved, Ralph, was, as one would expect, the CIA director, William Casey. Now, Casey denies that he was involved, but people very close and working in the government contend and contend again that Casey certainly helped. He coordinated the secret arms transfers with officials of the government of Saudi Arabia. And this was all done directly with White House approval. It had to be done with White House approval.
One of the things, however, I think it's important to point out, because the book that you're citing has very valuable and useful documentation, although the political framework of the book is entirely lacking in any insight. But the data is massive and very significant and important for all of us who are interested in demonstrating and documenting the realities on the ground. The political insight that's lacking is the awareness that a figure like Saddam Hussein, who was a Central Intelligence Agency agent from his youth, a right-wing figure in the Ba'ath Party, used by the CIA station chief to assassinate Abdul Karim Qasim, to destroy the national revolution in Iraq, to carry out in the Center for the Damned, the torture chamber that that Saddam Hussein presided over for the Central Intelligence Agency, the destruction of a whole generation of young students and trade union leaders and nationalist officers and village leaders who had led and participated in the Iraqi National Revolution. When they arm Saddam Hussein, when they give him arms, when they sustain his regime for 27 years, their man in Baghdad, when they deploy these weapons of biological and chemical agents to be used against the Iranian people, when they in fact direct Saddam Hussein's use of these weapons internally to suppress resistance to his destruction of the Iraqi national movement. All of this is at the door of imperialism. Saddam Hussein or the Shah of Iran or the corrupt feudal elites in Saudi Arabia and the Gulf are but the comprador elements that receive their arms, their money, their direction, their control from their masters in the Pentagon in Washington, the Central Intelligence Agency. That's the political context, and that's what makes such a charade of all of this United Nations folderol about inspections. The only inspections that need to be done are in Washington, D.C., in the Pentagon, and Fort Detrick, the real centers of mass weapons of mass destruction. The real opening of the books that has to occur is the profiteering by these corporations and their masters in control of the state apparatus that sustain imperialism and that pursue with weapons of real mass destruction that kill 500,000 people at a time, as is planned for Iraq today, that pursue the riches, the oil, the profits, the gains at the cost of human life on a genocidal scale. That's the context, and this information is only intelligible if it's understood within that political reality.
That's exactly right, Ralph. But to get to some of the specifics, because the players, the characters, or the names we see over and over, such as James Baker taking charge of the current George Bush's campaign when he stole it in Florida. So we have Donald Rumsfeld, our Secretary of Defense, leading the war charge and the war charge against Iraq with his deputy, Paul Wolfowitz. And here we have exposed, for me for the first time, maybe Ralph, when I talked to you about this, you were aware of it, but here we have in this book exposed that on December 17th, 1983, President Reagan's special Middle East envoy was none other than Donald Rumsfeld. And he was the one who was sent to Baghdad bearing the handwritten letter to Saddam to create close relationships. Now, as Ralph has stated, there had been close relationships through the CIA, but here it was President Reagan starting off with overt, to the public, relations, and none other than Donald Rumsfeld, who now wants to complete the seizure of the Iraqi oil. Because what they did in 1983 was to guarantee Exim Bank, that's U.S. government-backed loan guarantees, to Iraq to set up a new oil pipeline, a pipeline that would go to the Jordanian port of Aqaba. Now, it was a $500 million guarantee, and, of course, the pipeline would cost much more than that. And the pipeline was to carry 1 million barrels of oil, and the contractor was none other than the infamous Bechtel Corporation. And as people will remember, another Secretary of Defense, Caspar Weinberger, and the Secretary of State, George Shultz, went in and out of Bechtel. Shultz at one time being the Bechtel president. Now, Bechtel is the biggest engineering and construction firm in the United States, working in over 135 countries at the behest of U.S. interests.
And, Maya, I just want to interrupt to tell you that if you recall when we were discussing the category of terror and its genesis in the 70s, when the intelligence think tanks that were linked to the American Enterprise Institute and the Yahoo, as a Central Intelligence Agency operative with four different pseudonyms, including John L. Sullivan, a major conference took place in Tel Aviv at that time. And one of the point men was that of George Shultz. George Shultz, on behalf of Reagan, Gene Kirkpatrick was there, and they were preparing for the implementation of the Oded Yunon plan, the fragmentation of each Arab country in turn, Iraq being primary on the target as it was outlined in that Mossad document in 1978 and 1979. And there was George Shultz with Bechtel in the lead, preparing for the demonization of the very figures they had financed, such as Saddam Hussein, for the purpose of the war, the permanent war of destruction. And that's what all this charade of weapons of mass destruction is designed to serve.
Yes, Ralph, go on.
No, Matthew, you said stop at 9 o'clock.
Ralph, you just did that on air. We have a little technical glitch, but we'll go on. Since we don't know the time, we'll just at this point say you're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM. This is Taking Aim.
With Ralph Schoenman.
And Maya Schoen. And WBAI is listener-sponsored radio in the tri-state region and also available on the Internet at www.wbai.org. Many of you listen to us on the Internet in throughout the United States and internationally, and we really appreciate hearing from you. You can reach us by email at takingaim@pacbell.net. That's Pacific Bell, PACBELL.net. takingaim@pacbell.net. You can write to us at Taking Aim, Post Office Box 6345, Vallejo, V-A-L-L-E-J-O, California, 94591. And contact us at our voicemail in New York, 212-209-2953. Again, that's 212-209-2953. We have tapes and CDs of the various Taking Aim programs in the series, and also we have books and pamphlets. And one that might be of particular interest to you is by Ralph Schoenman, Iraq and Kuwait, History Suppressed, available through Amazon.com or Revolution Books or from us directly. And we'd also at this point like to thank William Walker, our engineer, and Erica Bridgman, who's also our engineer here at KPFA, and Matthew Finch and WBAI, and our associate Brad Wiedmeyer, who helps us every week get our materials together. This, by the way, is next week will be 1 year that Taking Aim has been on the air. And at this point, before we get, in case you're going away for the holidays, I want to thank all of you who've been such a great support to us and also to WBAI over this past year. And we look forward to many years of being with you here at WBAI for Taking Aim. There's so much for us to do in terms of organizing and understanding the issues in order to be better and more effective organizers.
And a special thanks to Matthew, who is not just the engineering this show, but is really the overseer of its production in New York, and who sees that it goes out over the air in good form.
So thanks again to all of you, and happy holidays and happy new year if you're not going to be with us next week, but we'll be away. Back to Bechtel, because it's very interesting in terms of the oil, the fact that the U.S. was trying to build this oil pipeline directly to have a closer connection to the supply of Iraq. It was the U.S. also, through these relationships set up by George Bush Sr., William Casey, and a whole group of ex-CIA agents that they used as a conduit, by the way, for arms coming from the Eastern Bloc, because it was easier for Iraq, they said, to repair weapons that came from the Soviet bloc country because they had Soviet technology than it was to start with the new American weapons. But one thing very interesting, given the UN reports and the claims by the U.S. of not knowing where so-called weapons of destruction are, is the fact that it's through the United States and its order of funding through Banque Nationale de Lavoro, BNL, that the huge petrochemical complex called PC2, that's about 70 kilometers south of Baghdad, it was constructed by contractors from the United States, Japan, Italy, France, and Britain, But the general contractor on PC-2 was none other than Bechtel.
And Bechtel and Banque Nazionale di Lavoro are a bridge to not just the Central Intelligence Agency and the laundering of money, but to the Mafia's contract agents, not only in Italy and the United States, of these nefarious designs. And it illuminates one of the other issues that we focus on, and namely the role of the United States in orchestrating the events of September 11th as the paradigm of a terror operation run by the state, the terrorizing of the American people by the rulers of the United States. It's George Shultz, who is one of those who received a detailed memorandum at least a week before September 11th. He cited it as September 7th, which delineated the pending attacks on the Trade Center by a civilian aircraft that would crash into them, the paradigm of what in fact was something prepared for 40 years, first with Operation Northwoods in 1962, and then in other locations using aircraft. This is an intelligence plan that has its genesis in the councils of the American intelligence agencies. Secretary of State under Reagan Shultz got a heads up about 9/11. He was not the only one, but he was a critical figure. And it's a direct tie to this permanent war that he is himself orchestrating now, Shultz going around promoting the necessity for the attack on Iraq. These are the figures with blood on their hands, the rulers of this country, who run this operation.
Our Taking Aim program today, Material Omissions, U.S. cover story for assault on Iraq. Another aspect of the material omissions is the fact that the U.S. hasn't gone to war against Iraq. We've been reporting that since March, the U.S. has been at war against Iraq. And DEPCA is... again, this Israeli intelligence report has been releasing chapter and verse about the U.S. actions. U.S. forces tighten military noose on southeast Iraq as the U.N. countdown begins. This is the first part of the DEPCA analysis. That's DEBKA.com. And this one appeared November 9th. And it talks about the U.S. aircraft dropping hundreds of thousands of leaflets over the Iraqi troop concentrations, and that the U.S. is, this is just one of them. The Washington Post and other publications later on go on to report that the U.S. has been doing nonstop airdrops to, you could say, soften the Iraqi troops, trying to get them to realize that they should lay down their arms, talking about the mass bombardment that the Iraqis do know the U.S. is going to unleash. But what DEPCA also talks about is the U.S. Trying to capture the Al-Harabi in the north up to Al-Kurna in the south, and that there are special forces, American and British special forces, and there are elements, they say, of the Iranian Revolutionary Guards special and intelligence units, and that they are there, and that they have been fighting contingents of Saddam's Martyrs Brigade, people from Saddam Hussein's Tikrit area of Iraq.
But Maya, it's important to note, I mean, the DEPCA documentation of the ongoing war against the Iraqi people, which has never ceased, the continuous bombardment, the continuous attacks on civilian populations. It was well articulated in an article by John Pilger in the Daily Mirror in London on the 22nd of September, called The Secret War in Iraq. And he says, the American and British attack on Iraq has long begun. While the Blair government continues to claim in Parliament that no final decision has been taken, in reality, the Royal Air Force and U.S. fighter bombers have been secretly bombing Iraq on an all-out basis. American and British bombing of Iraq has increased by 300%. From August to December, there were 62 attacks by American F-16 aircraft and RAF Tornadoes, an average of one bombing raid every 2 days. Most of these attacks have fallen on populated areas where civilian deaths are mounting. Under the United Nations Charter and the Conventions of War, Pilger states, these attacks amount to acts of piracy, no different in principle from the Luftwaffe's bombing of Spain in the 1930s as the rehearsal and precursor to its invasion of Europe. The bombing, he writes, is a secret war that is seldom in the news. But since 1991, and particularly in the last 4 years, this bombing attack upon the Iraqi population has been unrelenting. It is the longest Anglo-American campaign of aerial bombardment on a sustained basis since World War II, he writes. And indeed, he says that the U.S. and British government have attempted to justify this ad seriatim attack upon Iraq through a pretended U.N. mandate for so-called no-fly zones. In fact, these zones, which give them control of Iraq's airspace, have never been, in fact, incorporated in any Security Council resolution, as they claim. Not that if it had been, it would make the slightest moral or political difference, because it gives them no more entitlement to destroy a civilian population for the benefit of a U.N. sanction than it would without them. But their pretense that they have this
and,
is fake.
And Ralph Pilger had confirmed that with Boutros-Ghali, who had been the U.N. Secretary General before Kofi Annan.
Yes, Boutros-Ghali stated that Resolution 688, which is what the U.S. and British government cite, was in fact never even... the issue of no-fly zones was not even raised or debated or included. And he stated they offer, the resolutions in question, Boutros-Ghali stated, they offer no legitimacy to these countries that are sending aircraft to attack Iraq, unquote.
Before you go on with the Pilger report, I'd like to mention an important article that appeared in the Washington Post Sunday, December 22nd. Casualties of an undeclared war, civilians killed and injured as U.S. airstrikes escalate in southern Iraq. Because it gives some specific information about what you're talking about, Ralph, about the horrors for the Iraqi people. And Peter Baker writes, quote, what Nahla Muhammad remembers from that day is not the sirens or the jet planes, but running into her son on the street just after he finished shopping for supper. He asked what she would fix, she recalled. Meat, vegetables, and soup, she answered. He headed off, anticipating the family meal. 10 minutes later, according to a cousin who was there, a powerful blast slammed him to the ground as metal shards sliced through his body. Mohammed Sharif Reda, a 23-year-old mechanic, married just 2 months and planning to build a house for his family, was among four people who were killed December 1st, in what was called the undeclared war being waged here in southern Iraq.
And Maya, as the Daily Mirror article states, from 1995 to 1997, 50,000 Turkish troops, backed by tanks and fighter craft with U.S. intelligence officers, occupied the so-called Kurdish safe havens, terrorized Kurdish villages, murdered civilians. In December 2000, they were back and committed mass atrocities against the Kurdish population. All of the U.S. pretense that they are supporting some form of Kurdish self-determination or autonomy in these areas is nothing but that. It's only preparation for the seizure of Mosul and Kirkuk and the oil areas, and once again the Kurdish people will be betrayed. That you can take to the bank. Because this description of the sustained devastation is reported by the Daily Mirror to be the a reward for the Turkish regime, along with a bribe of $6 billion. The Turkish invasions are rarely reported, the Daily Mirror writes, and the Americans have deliberately suspended their, quote, humanitarian, unquote, patrols to allow the Turks to get on with the killing of Kurds unrestrained in Iraq. In fact, Turkish F-14s and F-16s loaded to the gills with munitions supplied by the United States, according to the Washington Post, are given free rein. And, quote, when the Americans return to the Iraqi airspace, they see the burning villages, the smoke and the fire. 36,000 sorties. The sheer scale of this bombing is astonishing. From 18 months, January 1999, to the present, 36,000 sorties over Iraq, 24,000 combat missions. Iraq has no air force, no modern air defenses. What is this meaning of combat? As the article states, they are dropping bombs, napalm, chemicals, and missiles that has laid to waste the infrastructure of the civilian population of Iraq. This is what the Wall Street Journal, the authentic voice of the American ruling class, stated about the bombings of the United States in these past years, the 36,000 sorties. The United States faces a genuine dilemma in Iraq. After 8 years of bombing in the northern south of Iraq, there are few targets remaining. We're down to the last outhouse, one U.S. official complained. And this is what it means in practical terms. As the article describes, a family of six, a shepherd, his father, his wife, four children, blown to pieces here, in a treeless, open country, a moonscape. The shepherd, his family, and the sheep clearly visible from the air. The shepherd's brother, Hussein Jassis, met reporters at a cemetery where the family is buried. I want to see the pilot who killed my children, the mother shouted to us. The shepherd's brother stated, I heard the explosions when I looked for my brother and family. The planes were circling overhead. When the fourth bombardment took place, everything was destroyed. Corpses, body parts, sheep blasted into the air. This story could be repeated not hundreds but thousands of times. And therefore, when the Americans demanded that Kofi Annan, the UN Secretary General, remove von Spanik because of his internal confidential document entitled Airstrikes in Iraq, prepared for the United Nations Security Section, he was immediately demonized in Washington and targeted for removal to the point where von Spanik had to resign. So it is very clear, as the Mirror reports, the Daily Mirror reports, that the slaughter in Iraq has been continuous. The Pentagon's doctrine for joint urban operation prepares for Baghdad being the target of overwhelming firepower, and it makes its own comparison to the destruction of Stalingrad in World War II by the Nazi troops. Cluster bombs, deep penetration bunker bombs, depleted uranium, a weapon of real mass destruction, is going to be used on a scale that has never been seen before. At least three times the volumes of depleted uranium are being prepared for Iraq in this current onslaught. Professor Doug Roque, the United States Army physicist in Iraq to clean up depleted uranium in Kuwait, stated the following. I am like most people in southern Iraq. I now have 5,000 times the tolerable levels of radiation in my body. What I experience now are respiratory problems, kidney problems, and cancer, the direct result which is afflicting the entire population. The controversy over whether or not depleted uranium is the cause of these problems is entirely manufactured. My own destroyed health is a testament to that. And the most devastating weapon of mass destruction was documented by UNICEF when it released its annual study of the world's children report, where we begin to get some sense of the human cost on the ground of this continual destruction of Iraq with weapons of mass destruction, including the tactical nuclear weapons we're describing. Quote, Iraq's child mortality rate has tripled to levels found in the least developed countries in the world. Iraq's regression in the past decade under the impact of these attacks is the most severe of 193 countries surveyed. One quarter of Iraqi babies are underweight, one out of four stunted from malnutrition. Iraq is allowed less than $150 per person to sustain life for an entire year. That is what this war is, a genocide on the ground.
Material omissions, what the U.S. rulers aren't telling us about their assault on Iraq. Now, one thing that's also going on, which went on, you may remember, in the Vietnam War. In the Vietnam War, every time U.S. soldiers killed somebody, they said it was an enemy, a person of the enemy, the body counts. and there were wild exaggerations even of what their body counts were. And so we have here in the United States, according to the Washington Post, again in this article, casualties of an undeclared war. We have the U.S. military reported that it dropped 23 precision weapons from 13 aircraft in southern Iraq on December 1st. Now, the U.S. said it was in retaliation of anti-aircraft fire at warplanes patrolling the northern no-fly zone 2 days earlier. But what we have stated, and what Iraq is, what is clear from all the intelligence reports, is that Iraq cannot and has not been able to shoot down any warplane because it doesn't have the military facilities to do so. Furthermore, the U.S. is saying that it is attacking air defense targets near Basra and Kut. But in fact, what it did attack was the oil installation of the state-run Southern Oil Company, because Iraq depends on oil for its foreign currency to keep the country running. So right now, the U.S. is targeting the oil installations in order to make sure that Iraq has no money to keep going. Now, the Southern Oil Company is in the center of Basra, and it was hit by these warplanes between 10 and 11 a.m. Now, the Iraqis has said 4 people were killed and 27 injured. And the Washington Post was able to have a reporter in the compound, and a reporter examined the site. And what they found was Wakhtar Rahim Fahed. Fahed is 25 and a clerk at Southern Oil. And he had just returned from vacation and was walking between the buildings, when she was suddenly blown off her feet. Quote, "I felt like I was being sucked up into the air 2 to 3 meters up," she said. "I didn't know if it was a rocket or missile or a bomb. I didn't know what was the matter. I was afraid and shocked. The noise was very, very loud, and I lost feeling in my legs. I closed my eyes because I was so scared." She was dragged away by 2 colleagues and woke up in the hospital. Her brother had thought she had been killed. In fact, she suffered a head injury, multiple fractures of her leg, and is now on 6 types of drugs, faces many operations, and possibly will not walk again. This is material omissions, what the United States is not telling us about their ongoing assault against Iraq, their blood, their war for oil, blood for oil.
Maya, the Washington Post on the 21st of December ran a headline, "General to troops, sit tight, no end in sight to war on terrorism, permanent war. Camp Al-Sayriya, Qatar. The United States military's top general told his troops stationed in the Persian Gulf to brace for a long-term conflict with no end to the declared war on global terrorism." That's a quote. On his 3-day visit to the Gulf region in Afghanistan, Richard B. Myers, General Myers, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, was asked repeatedly by soldiers for an administration exit strategy and for a lessening of the repeated and continual deployments the troops are experiencing. "The troops are restless. I can't give you a good answer. I can't just do it. I just can't," he said. "This is a long-term operation. The Aldeed Air Force Base, where American tankers have been flying and refueling missions, the Air Force Base known as Camp Snoopy, where U.S. transport aircraft operate resupply flights, Camp Al-Salya, where the U.S. Central Command has set up forward command headquarters to run this war, are packed with computer terminals, secure phones, flat-screen video monitors to prepare for military operations, quote, throughout the Central Command region, from Southwest Asia to the Horn of Africa." That's the Washington Post. General Myers said he found his troops in Qatar ready and upbeat, but the soldiers made no secret of their interest in learning when war might come and when an exit strategy would be disclosed. Air Force Colonel Tim Scott, the base commander, said his biggest challenge was keeping the rumors under control, because no one outside of a select few has any idea what the real plans are, unquote. And that is amplified in the Independent by David Osborne, the Independent in London, on December 22nd, when he discloses that General Myers, Chairman of Joint Chiefs of Staff, is giving the green light, U.S. forces are ready to attack, he stated. And it amplifies the fact that this entire charade of waiting and seeing, of relying on inspections, has nothing to do with the reality on the ground. They are going forward with this war, and he declared, the U.S. is absolutely capable of fighting a war on many fronts. There should be no question about that in anybody's mind.
In fact, Ralph, the U.N. is preparing for over a million refugees. They've been keeping it under wraps, the fact that they have been purchasing supplies. And there were at least a million Kurdish refugees from the Gulf War, and there probably will be even more refugees in this devastation.
The London Times on December 23rd. United Nations chief issues secret orders for war with Iraq. The United Nations chief. The United Nations is making secret plans for a war that will halt all Iraqi oil production, degrade the country's electricity system, provide civil unrest, and create 900,000 refugees, the London Times has learned. Internal UN documents predict the worst fighting will be in three central governorates around Baghdad. And it goes into a precise and detailed internal and secret plan of the United Nations, so much for the hypocrisy of this putative scheme of inspections, that the United Nations itself has its secret and internal plans anticipating and preparing for the war in Iraq. And that is the meaning of Blix declaring that the dossier of Saddam Hussein's government of 12,000 pages has nothing new in it and does not reveal the actuality of weapons. It is a shill for the U.S. It is a preparation for war sanctioned by the United Nations in advance.
We didn't have time today to go into an incredible article that appeared in the New York Times on Sunday, so much for the plan to scrap old weapons, which talks about the Iron Triangle, the alliance of Pentagon and weapons producers, and the fact that people go like Donald Rumsfeld and Paul Wolfowitz, they shuffle between the arms producers and the U.S. government. Today, our program was Material Omissions, the U.S. cover story for the assault on Iraq. Remember, we are the many and they are the few, and it is our organizing, our anti-war demonstrations, our getting our city officials and local officials to say that they will not collaborate with these U.S. plans. That is really the most effective way to bring us together and to stop the war.
And to keep in mind in our anti-war struggles that we cannot and must not be taken in by the official fiction of the established press. The Pentagon has prepared a propaganda apparatus to disseminate lies and false information, a covert operation to influence public opinion. And here in the Associated Press and the Washington Post is a prime example of that. The United States has disclosed that Iraq has an audacious plan to destroy its own food sources, power supplies, oil fields, and civilian infrastructure, and blame America for it.
This scorched earth plan that they've put on Iraq is really the policy and has been the on-the-ground work of the United States rulers.
Blaming the victim, imputing to the victim the crimes of the perpetrators.
This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. We'll be with you next week. You can reach us at 212-209-2953. You can contact us at takingaim@pacbell.net. And remember to tell all your friends and family throughout the United States and abroad that they can listen to us at www.wbai.org and in the tri-state region at 99.5 FM. Happy holidays.
holidays from all of us at WBAI Pacifica Radio. This is Valerie Van Isler, general manager of the station, and today and for the next few days, I'm passing the torch on to the new general manager, Don Rojas.
This is Don Rojas. It's a pleasure to have the first opportunity to wish you all season's greetings, and we'll be back with you in a few days. Bernard?
Bernard White here, program director, hoping you the best for the coming year.
From all of us, a season of blessings and our best hopes for a year of peace and a year of justice. Please tune in on Monday, December 30th from 7:30 a.m. to 9 a.m. for the December Report to the listeners. Again, happy holidays from everybody at WBAI.
Happy holidays.
Enjoy.
Just about taking us up to the 6 o'clock hour on WBAI, listener-sponsored commercial-free community radio. Coming up in a moment will be a report of the day's news with the WBAI.